Hello and welcome to The Laydown, a podcast where three booksellers from Gibson's Bookstore in Concord, New Hampshire chat about all things literary. My name is Ryan, and this month we're doing things a little bit differently. Indie Bookstore Day is the last Saturday in April, and we just hosted a virtual event with a group of amazing New England booksellers that we are going to share with you today in lieu of a typical episode. Now, I was originally scheduled to be a part of this virtual event, but I was very under the weather at the time of recording. I had just given blood that morning and it did not agree with me at all. So our wonderful, amazing, fantastic events coordinator, Elizabeth, jumped in and ran the event like the professional that she is. It's an incredible event. I think you're going to love listening to it. There's a ton of amazing book recommendations, as always. And next month, we will probably be back to our normal schedule with a regular episode of The Laydown. Now, for bonus content, if you are so inclined, the video recording of this event will be up on our YouTube channel. I will put that link in the show notes if you would like to watch the event instead of just listening to it. With all that said, I am going to end this intro so that you can jump into this fantastic event. Thank you so much to Elizabeth for jumping in at the last second to host. Thank you so much to our incredible panelists, Julie, Jess, Lily, and Steph. You're all the best. I love you so much. Without further ado, here is the audio recording of our virtual event with our New England bookseller friends in celebration of Indie Bookstore Day. Enjoy!
Good evening and welcome to Gibson's Bookstore, the Laydown Podcast. I am your temporary host this evening. I am Elizabeth, the events coordinator. This is usually Ryan's job, but Ryan, the civil servant that she is, donated blood and it's kicking her butt. So we are flying in to the rescue today. We are doing this without Ryan. Ryan, you're going to be editing this later. I do apologize for however this goes, but we're going to do it live. So here we are. Welcome to our attendees. Hello, hello at home. This is a whole crew of booksellers and their pets. If you're watching this live, you just watched my massive cat climb all over me, and now he's shaking the table. If any of our other booksellers happen to have their pets, I would love to see them. I miss seeing everybody's animals. But right now, let's just dive into this. We're going to be doing this kind of following Ryan's podcast format. This is a live taping, so to speak. Let's begin with a round of bookseller introductions. Julie, why don't we start with you? Tell us your name, your store, what you do there.
My name is Julie Kerrigan. I am at Copper Dog Books. I'm one of the co-owners, and we are out of Beverly, Massachusetts.
And Jess?
Hi there, everyone. I am Jessica Hollerin. I also work with Copper Dog Books. I am their social media coordinator or virtual book slinger.
Lily.
Hi, I'm Lily, and I was a sales rep for Indies for well over a decade. And for the past year, I have been taking readings remotely over Zoom.
And Steph?
Hi, my name is Stephanie Hines. I am the children's manager at Print a Bookstore in Portland, Maine.
Excellent. So if we have any audience members who are currently watching right now, they want to tell us what they're reading, we're going to dive into what we're currently reading. Does anybody have anything that they're super excited about right now that they want us to dive into? Not book recommendations yet, but what you're currently reading that you're just super stoked about. I'll start. This is actually a recommendation from Jess. I'm reading The Unbroken, which, yes, Jess, your face just got really excited, and Lily is suddenly diving for a book pile right now, I suspect next to her computer. And it's Unbroken. Of course, I suddenly don't remember the name. Jess, do you remember the name of the author?
Their name is C.L. Clarke, and they are absolutely amazing. There's been like this kind of campaign going around of people showing off their flexed arms because Terrain on the cover is pretty jacked and has great arms. And so even the author took a selfie flexing, and it was just pure poetry.
It's It's pretty glorious. So far what The Unbroken is about I'm only about 20% in, so I'm not really into the plot, but it's a fantasy setting and a soldier was conscripted, and by conscripted, that's the nice way of saying kidnapped as a child and turned into a soldier, kidnapped from the colonies and turned into a soldier and is now being sent back to their homeland that they don't really remember. And everybody's like, is it nice to be back? And she's like, I was six. I don't remember what it was like, but I'm now being sent to kill people who may or not have known who my parents were. There's the Empress's niece, I think. So there's a couple different, I want to pull up the cover art just to show our audience members at home, but let's jump over to Julie while I find that. What are you reading right now, Julie?
I just finished a reread of the Other series by Anne Bishop, which is it's a fantasy, sort of like an urban fantasy, but it's an alternate Earth where humans are not the top predator. There are Terra Ingen, I'm a reader. I don't know how to say things very well, but it is a form of the Earth's teeth and fury. And if you go outside human controlled areas, you are in wild country and you're not going to come back. And of course, so it's a 5-book series. And throughout about book three, they're talking about a human's first and last movement that is trying to covertly build weapons and airplanes. And they're going to use those to take over the country that they deserve because no one, the animals are not using it correctly. So there's shifters that form the barrier between the humans and wild country. And it is, it's a great series. This is the third or fourth time rereading it. But it's a good, good series, especially now when you kind of wish there was creatures that were defending the Earth from humans.
That's intense. I mean, it's how often humans are pretty used to being the top of the food chain. That's intense. And you said you're multiple times reading it. So when was the book published approximately?
I want to say about 10 years ago. She releases one a year and she's since moved back to the Black Jewels series that she's maybe better known for fantasy. But she has, there's two others that sort of follow on after this 5-book where you're following the same characters. And then she sort of moved on actually to show what happens after. So it's, it's good. I've been really finding that fantasy series take me away from our current world. And the overcoming massive societal difficulties is one of those things that I've been appreciating lately.
Before we jump over to Jess, I just want to share my screen here to show you the cover art, if I can, of Unbroken, which is just ridiculous and amazing. Can you guys see that?
It says that you started screen sharing, but it's still black.
Ah, okay. Well,
it will come. We just have to.
Well, rather than we'll wait for it to share, and then Jess, why don't you tell us about what you're reading?
Okay. Yeah. So the backlist book that I just finished that I thought was really, really good was When the Tiger Came Down the Mountain by Ni Vo. Basically, it's kind of along the same lines as, I guess, like The Unbroken or a new book that's coming out in June called She Who Became the Sun, or I think that's coming out in July. But basically, it's kind of like an eat the rich, like destroy colonizers vibe, which I'm really into right now. Just kind of like tearing it all down. I'm just really into that. The cover art is gorgeous, as is everything from Tor.com. And the main character is a cleric named Chi, and they find themselves and their companions at the mercy of a band of fierce tigers who are hungry. And basically the only way that they can like escape with their lives is to tell a story to the tigers. Yeah. So it's really intense. The tigers can shapeshift into like a human form. And yeah, it's pretty wild, but I really liked it. It wasn't anything that I expected. And their first book, Empress of Salt and Fortune, is also really good, but you don't need to read When the Tiger Came Down the Mountain in order to read Empress of Salt and Fortune. And I'll also like put a link in the chat just so you can read the summary. But yeah, I really, really love everything by Nevo. They also have one coming out in June, I believe, called The Chosen and the Beautiful. And that is wonderful, fantastic, amazing. So anything by Nevo is gorgeous.
What about you, Lily?
Okay, if we're doing backlist, I kind of should probably be embarrassed that it took me this long to read The Hating Game, which I'm totally ruining the vibe of what we've been recommending. Like, yeah, Julie, I think you might have recommended it to me like when it was new. Like when Bookstore Romance Day was going to be a thing and Julie was like, read these books, and I can't, like, so might have been Meg. Either way, I've been happy. So, and for whatever reason, like, it sat on my shelf, probably because, you know, it's the luck of being in the book publishing industry. But yeah, I finally got around to it, and it kind of broke a pandemic, like slow reading, like just having to get through stuff and really having to work hard to get through stuff for me. It's not in the theme of what we've been recommending. I probably, you know, maybe I should have recommended sci-fi fantasy to stay with the theme, but it's a fun romance that is, I feel like I throw out the word romance, we all do, when some people have these connotations of the word romance, right? They think consumers can sometimes think of it as their first association maybe is 50 Shades of Grey. And there's lots and lots and lots of romance is not that way. As we get more into this, at least half my recommendations are going to be probably romance. So, to me, if romance ends up being on the 50 Shades of Grey spectrum, which to me is more sex scenes, less plot, I don't like it. I need plot, and I need a nice story and new character development. And Hating Game is definitely there, along with some other books I'll recommend as we get into this.
I loved The Hating Game. I absolutely loved it. It was, I think at about that point, I was starting to read a lot more romance. And I actually, at least in our bookstore, and the rest of you can speak to this as well, romance actually became very popular selling in the bookstore because there's a couple hallmarks of a romance novel as defined by the Romance Writers of America Association. And that is that romance is the central plot tenet, not that it's a story with a romance, but the story is romance with other plot tenets. And then also the other main feature is that there is a happily ever after. They do end up together. One of them doesn't die, you know, there is a happily ever after. And this past year has been so rotten that there have been so many people who are like, I just need a story where I know that there's a happily ever after. And it's like, here you go. At the bookstore, Ryan and I came up with a scale. We call it the steam scale. And we have like a little thermometer graphic that we go with it. And we're just like, we have five levels of how saucy the romance gets. And it's like level one is like some smooches, you know, and then it goes all the way to like, it gets pretty steamy. It fades to black. It doesn't quite fade to black. And The Hating Game is like all the way at the top. Danger, will get burned by this very hot story. The Hating Game was amazing. And I read the book and I was just like, I hate both of these characters. They're awful people. I love them so much. What happens next? Did she just throw up on him? Oh, and he's taking care of her. And it was absolutely fantastic. So that was has been, thank you for coming to my TED Talk. The Hating Game is amazing. And I will be recommending her third book actually later in this podcast. But after this aside, Steph, why don't you tell us what you're reading?
Yeah. So I have been in this space where it's really hard to like pick a book and stick with it lately. So I'm in between a bunch of different books. The Unbroken is actually one of the ones that I've been reading. And then the upcoming Nevo, the Chosen and the Divine Chosen. I'm blanking on the second half of that title.
Is it The Chosen and the Beautiful by Nevo?
Chosen and the Yes, The Chosen and the Beautiful. I've started that one. I'm in the midst of so many books, but I actually finished a book today and I was very proud of myself. So I finished today Happily Ever Afters by Elise Bryant, which is a YA romance that came out earlier this year in January. It is very, very sweet. So I am also in that camp of just give me something happy right now. The general premise is that the main character, Tessa, and her family have just moved from Northern California to Southern California. And she is starting at this new school that is this super fancy, like art-focused high school that she did not actually apply for it, even though she was excited for it. It was her mother took her writing and submitted a portfolio. So she's entering this space and is excited, but also terrified and is convinced that she does not fit there. And that feeling gets compounded when she enters her very first workshop class and just cannot write. It's the first time in her entire life that she cannot get words out on the page. So her best friend from home suggests that, oh, the solution to this, because you write romance, is for you to find inspiration to write what you know, which means you need to fall in love and have a romance to base your stories off of. And of course, there is a very cute boy who just so happens to almost perfectly fit the description of one of the main characters in the book that she's been writing, who quickly becomes the focus. But then there's also this other boy who, you know, sure, someone might have a crush on him, but she certainly wouldn't have a crush on him, even though he makes delicious baked goods that I was just really hungry for, like beautiful muffins and cupcakes and everything this morning. But it's this really sweet story of her trying to find her confidence and trying to find her voice and also sorting through those feelings of what do I think I want versus what do I really need. So I definitely recommend it. I had a lot of fun and I actually read it in just like 3 days, which in normal times is like pretty good for like pretty average for me. But in pandemic times, I was like, I don't remember the last time I've read a book this quickly. So
pandemic brain fog is real. And I think pretty much every time I've said those words, pandemic brain fog, almost every reader I know has gotten like that 1,000-yard stare. And it's like, yes. I feel like we could almost segue into books that focus about food because it's not on my agenda here, but I have also just read a couple books about food. Last year, we could also segue into like books about food and romance, because that seems to be a theme. I seem to have read like a dozen books about romance novels about that involve families with rival restaurants. And I did not realize that this was a subgenre, but I'm noticing a pattern. Last year, it was Tweet Cute, which was a really cute YA romance. It was smooches only on the Steam scale. It's because it's YA, it's rather chaste. And it was about rival grilled cheese restaurants in New York. And I read this and I'm like, it was absolutely amazing. And I was suddenly made like a dozen grilled cheeses. I'm the only one in my house that can actually eat dairy. So it was an interesting week. Because I was like making all these grilled cheese and my family's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, it's just, I didn't know you could put apple slices in grilled cheese. And you like, you can. I just finished a pho love story, which I thought was pronounced pho, but it's not. It's pho, the Vietnamese noodle soup, which was, again, it's like a Romeo and Juliet with food and like 100% less death. And it's two rival Vietnamese restaurants across the street. There was the Chicken Sisters, which is also rival like fried chicken restaurants. And I did not realize that this was this whole subgenre, but I feel like they need to have a disclaimer. Hey, Act Your Age, Eve Brown. I haven't read that one. That one's on my to-do list. Lily is holding up
I'm holding it up because it fits into your like romance food. Like it's not as 100% foodie as the other books are themed, but it has a food element. So, and it's also awesome. And like, she's an author. I read all of her books, which is not an easy thing to do when you're in the book industry, like to read all of an author's books. Like you get one you like and you're like, okay, this author's awesome. Like I read all of her books. So if you want, like I literally pulled it off the shelf behind me to be like, this one qualifies. I also just read it too. So
were you hungry when you read it? Like, did you read it and go, now I am hungry? Because I feel like that would just make it qualify automatically.
She cooks a lot. She cooks like comfort food. I more wanted to live in the inn. I don't know, Julie just unmuted herself. So I feel like Julie has an opinion on this.
It was baked goods. It made me want the baked goods and tea because they're British. And so it's British tea and baked goods.
You know what? I wanted a full English breakfast. That's true. That is the one. Yeah, right? Like, yeah. She makes like a full English breakfast. It sounds amazing at one point in the book. And I was like,
that one, if it's anything like her first two, that one is not a one on the steam scale. That one, I believe, is a five. That one, like the first two, like burned my face off. I read the first one and I was 70 pages in and I'm like, you know, everybody said this one was spicy, but it's not. And then bam, there it was.
So there's red.
Yeah. So.
Yes, I had to not read it before school. Like I had, yes.
Yeah.
When I got it. Important.
I don't know about any of you, but I mean, I'm a mother and I have learned that when I'm listening to audiobooks and I'm pulling up to the kids pick up and drop off line, you have to turn the volume down sometimes because that's not an environment in which you want to have the volume blaring through the car windows. Just a pro tip from this book.
I was just about to say, seems like a very good pro tip.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I have a similar one, which is when the kids crawl on your lap to give you a big hug, you turn them away so they can't see the printed words. Like, don't learn those words, kids. Or don't ask me what they mean. One or the other.
It's only this year that my oldest has gotten really proficient at reading. And so it was never a concern for me before because he'd be like, oh, you know, what's that word, mommy? And I'd be like, that says potato or something, you know, like, yeah. And now he's reading things and he's like, what does bastard mean? And I'm like, okay, so let's go back to your books over here. And mommy can't read these.
I am teaching kids to read and I had to break up a word the other day and their parents can hear them in the background and the word was cockroach. And I was like, we're just reading this. Like, that's it. You're just going to have to sight read this word. Like that's too bad. I'm not breaking up this into syllables.
You're on your own. This is glorious. And I do not want to stop this, but I have an agenda that we're supposed to be keeping. Sorry, Ryan. This is going to be like the longest, most ridiculous podcast episode ever. Indie bookstore day plans. I really want to just get back to what we're talking about. So maybe we could just, I don't know, go really quickly through this. Who wants to go first with indie bookstore? Jess, you and Julie work at the same store.
I was just going to say, I can go first for Copper Dog. It's going to be a fun-filled, packed week leading up to it. We have some giveaways planned on Instagram if we hit 2,500 followers. So someone follow us, please, so we can give you Where's Waldo books. We have in-store giveaways. So we have some really cool themed bundles for in-store. We also have a exclusive Liberté art print that the publisher was so kind to send to us because Alyssa, our celebrity bookseller, got the Indie Next pick for April. So they sent us a giant, big, beautiful print. And they were like, here, you get one for your store, you get one for the bookseller, and you get one to give away. And we were like, wow, we're blessed. So we have that. I'm sure that there's going to be blind dates with the books leading up to it. I don't know. Is there anything else I'm missing, Julie?
No, I think that's it.
Okay, cool. I got it. Sweet.
Yeah, and more.
And much, much more. And I will be there in person instead of cloistered away in my Norway, Maine wilderness hut that I have been in since, you know, December. So I will be back in civilization, baby, which I'm excited about.
Lily or Steph, do either one of you want to share? Are your stores doing independent bookstore day?
So print is in a very fascinating situation right now where we are always a pretty small staff. I joke the fact that the pandemic has been the one occasion where it's like, oh, being chronically understaffed is a good thing because no one had to cut any hours. If anything, I think one of our part-time workers actually took on more hours just to manage everything. So both my coworkers left at the end of last month. So it's currently just myself and the two co-owners. And so we haven't gotten a lot of big, exciting things planned for Independent Bookstore Day, just to manage all of that. I will tease that we've figured out who's going to be coming on as our events coordinator, but I cannot announce that yet. And we are looking to bring on another full-time bookseller, which is going to be the first time that we'll have three full-time staff in addition to the two co-owners, which we're super pumped for. But generally for Independent Bookstore Day, because we're also still closed to browsing other than appointments, we're going to definitely be promoting all of the amazing, really cool swag and special items that I know the Independent Bookstore Day team and the ABA has put out. I don't know if people have been seeing on social media already some of those teasings out to our audience, but there are some exclusive prints, there's some exclusive tote bags, there's some exclusive books. And honestly, I feel like each and every year that lineup of products is just getting better. I definitely feel like this is one of the most exciting lineups of things. There's a number of items that if they are still there by the end of the day, I think I will be snatching up for myself, but I will be the good bookseller and let the customers have their first grab. But that's mainly what we're going to be focusing on. And I'm sure, coming up with some ways to celebrate a little bit more on social media as well.
I'm certain pretty much every store got the Baby Yoda onesie. And I'm jealous that doesn't come in my size and I don't have anybody with a baby that small in my life right now who doesn't already have that. I mean, I know Ryan is a baby, but I think she already has it and I want it in my size. Why are all the cool kids' clothes not in grown-up sizes? It's very upsetting. Lily.
Elizabeth, we'll have to commission this for you. We'll have to commission a special edition Yoda onesie just for adults. I think that is worth doing. Maybe it's a bonfire campaign in the future. Just, you know, keep your options open. Keep your options open.
I accept.
Onesies used to be like adult clothes in the 90s, right? Like, am I the only one who remembers wearing like leotards? Like,
we are grown-ups, we call them bodysuits.
Yes, Baby Yoda bodysuits. There you go, new IBD idea.
It's like when you're a grown-up, you call things by different names. Like a Lunchable is now like a charcuterie board, you know? It's like you just call it by the grown-up name. So a Baby Yoda onesie is a bodysuit, you know? So that's how.
On the topic of just clothes that are only made for children that I want so desperately for myself, I don't know if any of you have seen one of those TikTok kids where it's a mom putting down like food in front of their like 3-year-old or something, be like, okay, no, don't touch it, and just leaves a camera there and walks away, and then you get to see whether or not the 3-year-old's able to contain themselves. In one of those videos, the little kid is wearing this sweater that's just like white and then has an alphabet print on it that looks like those classic magnets. I'm so mad because it looks like it's only like a child's pajama set, but also, if there's anyone out there who makes clothes, please make adult-sized sweaters that are just white with like the magnet alphabets, because I think booksellers everywhere will just buy them immediately. It looks so cute.
And reading teachers, like, come on. I could just like, this letter. I want you to put this letter in the word.
There's an untapped market here for certain. I mean, even if they did it on demand, you know, because you don't want to be stuck with inventory, I would buy one. We should probably, Ryan's probably like gnashing her teeth at us right now. Lily, what is your bookstore doing for Indie Bookstore Day? Anything special?
Well, I don't have a bookstore. I'm teaching right now. So I personally will be shopping. So
what are your personal Indie Bookstore Day plans? Are you choosing tea or coffee?
It really depends on the day, because I literally like,
or both.
See, like off camera during the day, I do tea and coffee. So it depends on the day.
Both.
You can't make me choose.
All right.
And I won't.
All right. So, and then I will wrap that up with Gibson's Bookstore. We have, of course, all the cool merchandise, some of the cool merchandise. And then we are also going to be doing our very first book signing in over a year. It'll be outside on the sidewalk. And we're all a little bit nervous because we've all gone a little bit feral over the last year. And we're not 100% certain. This was my job in the before. And I'm nervous because I haven't done this in over a year. I'm sure it's all locked in my muscle memory. I'm sure I'll get there and immediately like my body will carry me to where the chairs are. I'll be like, what am I doing? But we are going to be doing a sidewalk book signing with a author. I think it's her eighth book, Erin Bowman. She's from Bow, New Hampshire. And she we love her. She has a new young adult novel called Dustborn. And she will be outside. We'll all have masks on and please keep polite distance, but we're going to try it. We're going to do an outside book signing on the sidewalk. We're going to hope it doesn't get windy. And we're just going to do our best. We're going to do that. It's going to be great fun. It's going to be really exciting to see other book people in person. I can't wait to see other human beings. And then we also, that evening at 5 p.m., the book signing is from 1 to 2:30, and it's drop-in. You don't have to make an appointment. We do have her books for sale. And then at 5 p.m. that evening, we're going to have a virtual author cocktail hour with a quartet of sci-fi fantasy authors. We're going to have Kat Howard, Catherine Valente, Kelly Braffett, and Freya Marska. And we're very excited. I'm pretty certain that Ryan came up with this idea specifically to ask some of her new favorite authors so that she could come and just gush about how much she loved their books. Jess, you just had a moment there too. And I'm pretty certain that this was just their entire grand plan. And honestly, I'm here for it. I thought it was very clever. Registration is free in Zoom, and we're all just kind of going to hang out and ask ridiculous questions. I'm going to ask, you know, would you rather write a romance scene or a fight scene? You know, like which one is harder? Because they're both really hard. So which one would you ask ridiculous questions? Maybe would you rather fight one horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses or something like that? So that's our independent bookstore day plans and much more, I'm sure. I can't wait until next year when hopefully we can start baking cookies for people and having them in. Maybe, you know, we'll do like a passport in New England, but this year we've got the outside book signing and we're gonna see how that goes. Do you guys wanna talk about books that you've read in the past few weeks that you are absolutely obsessed with and that you want everybody to read?
Yes, 100,000% yes. I would love nothing more. Do you want me to go first? I have it right here. I'm so ready. I'm just vibrating with intensity about this book because this book is insanely amazing.
Jess, tell us about this book.
Okay, so it's She Who Became the Sun by Shelley Parker Chan. By Tor and Tor.com are just, I don't know how, I could probably like have hosted an entire TED talk about how amazing they are. They never disappoint. They're amazing. They go above and beyond with diversity. The stories are just insanely good. Anyway, this book is Shelley Parker Chan's first historical fantasy and it is radiant. It is just amazing. It's a sweeping epic fantasy that takes you from this child Zoo as a peasant starving. Her family dies like right in front of her and it's really intense. You're like, oh my god, this poor girl. She assumes her brother's identity and becomes a monk and then somehow works her way up into being a general of an army. And you are just like in awe of her the entire time because she like does not bow to gender, like any like tropes of gender. She subverts all of them. She really like is so ambitious to the point where you are like, wow, I'm scared of you. Like, I'm intimidated by you because you want everything. And she is also like kind of balanced out by the general of an opposing army named Ouyang. And he also does not conform to any gender. He is a eunuch. So he's kind of looked as an outcast. And they describe his face as feminine, but he's like one of the fiercest warriors of the general's army. And basically these two go toe to toe many times throughout the book and have many intense, like, I guess, battles. And it's just so amazing, like the way that the author captured each of their individual ambitions and what each of them thought that their fate would be, and like how they tried to like create their own fate. So it covers like fate versus free will, covers gender, queer romances in here. And it's all basically like a reimagining of the rise of the founding emperor of the Ming Dynasty. So you also learn a little bit about like Chinese history, which is really cool. Like, I actually looked up a lot of the like years and battles that they were talking about, and they, lo and behold, were real. So it's just a really fascinating read. I love fantasy. I've been definitely gravitating towards like military fantasies or about like colonizers or about like the underdog rising up and kind of like overthrowing like a higher power. And this book captures all of that. And it is amazing. It's just an amazing read. Like, it gives you goosebumps when you finish it. You're like, holy crap. It's like an experience. Anyway, I'm done. Sorry. It's great.
So you liked it.
Yeah, just a little bit. Just a, you know, just a little bit. Yeah. Yeah, I loved it. It will wreck you. It'll destroy you. And you'll be glad that you were like completely devastated by it. It's just one of those books where you're like, I have so many emotions, but I'm really glad that I went on this journey. And I'm pretty sure it's just the first in a series, which also crushes me because I'm like, oh my God, now I have to wait so long. But it's so good. It is so good. Anything by Tor is amazing.
The best books wreck you anyway. So who wants to go next? What you got?
I'll go. Oh, Steph, go ahead.
Okay. So I felt like the first book that came to mind was a good jumping off point from Jess's book because it is a Tor.com book. I promise New England booksellers probably read other publishers as well. But the upcoming new Becky Chambers, The Psalm of the Wild Built, is it's a novella, but it contains so much. It is genuinely just a book of my heart. The general premise is that it is set at a point in the future on potentially another planet where the main character is a tea monk named Dex. And so their job is to travel from town to town and just sit down and make tea for someone and have a conversation. And especially in the context of everything that's been going on, it just captures so much of what I miss about being around people, of just that soft interaction. But Dex has reached a point where they are now questioning, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? Where am I going? And have decided that they are going to head into this wild space. So the planet has been sectioned off where there is space that is designated for people and space that is designated for nature, because they had reached a turning point in their civilization where if they did not start taking care of the planet, things were going to collapse. And for once in one of these types of situations, they made the good decision. There was also a situation where a number of years ago, all of the robots decided that they didn't want to work with the people anymore, that they wanted to go off and find their own space and find their own communities. And so no one has seen a robot in hundreds and hundreds of years until Dex goes into the wild spaces and meets the first robot. And the robot has come and to ask, what do you need? What do people need? And it becomes this conversation between the two of them as they are traveling to this long abandoned temple to get down to that quintessential question. I am so excited to know that there will be more books set in this world because I just want to live in it forever, especially in the context of what people were saying before about how so many customers are looking for romance books. I have just found such a comfort in books that are soft and books that don't want to hurt you, which I feel like in a lot of literary circles, the idea that if a book's not going to hurt you, then, oh, it doesn't have literary merit or it's not good for you. That's utter rubbish. Like, let's focus more on those books that give us hope. So I definitely think everyone should pick up this book. I'm obsessed with it.
I can jump in next. Speaking of romance, I actually am only going to recommend, I wrote these down. I think I'm only going to recommend one fantasy at the moment because, and I'm normally like literally my Instagram rates whether or not books have dragons in them, but I'm only going to do one fantasy tonight, which is The Midnight Bargain by C.L. Polk, which is kind of like Bridgerton meets The Magicians. In that Bridgerton, not the saucy bits in Bridgerton, but the marriage market, the social climbing and the scheming as the women try to make, and the men try to make the best marriage match that they can. So that they can, you know, I mean, they're setting up their life, but they're not only setting up lives, they're setting up dynasties. They're setting up all of that. And it focuses on a main character, Beatrice, whose her entire family's financial hopes are pinned on her marriage. Her father made a bad investment and it didn't pan out. And now they're like, you have like one chance. Basically, you make a great match and you're going to save the family, which, you know, no pressure. The benefit, the reason they think they can she can do it is because she has a strong sorcerer's aura about her, and there is magic in this world. And so, to a man would seek a woman, especially if he himself did not have a sorcerer's ability, he would seek a wife that had sorcerer's abilities to bear sorcerer children. Women are not allowed to practice magic because if they are practicing magic when they are pregnant, a spirit can enter the baby, because the spirits are like, we seek corporeal form because we can't taste, we can't smell, we can't touch, we can't experience the world, and we want it. So women are basically collared and unable to access magic during their childbearing years. And Beatrice is like, I can't live like that. I've tasted magic and I cannot do it. So she's trying to find a way to teach herself magic and to create a bargain with a lesser or greater spirit to make herself unmarriageable so that she can help her father with their company. And so their family is trying to be, she's doing this all in secret. She's also falling in love. So she's fighting against herself because she's found like the one man who would make her happy, who would respect her. He is ironically like from a different country. So of course, you know, England doesn't really show itself nicely. So she's basically fighting against duty to family because they have bet everything on this. They have mortgaged their house. They have done everything. And they're like, if you don't get a good husband, and she will, but she's very marriageable. She's basically at the first or second choice for the season. If you don't marry well, we're done for. But can she give up her whole life for her whole life? So that, and you're there just like, oh honey, like no, because she truly loves her family. Her family isn't like this abusive evil. She truly loves her family and she does not want them to be left destitute. But she also, she's like, I will die if I have to do this. So she doesn't really know what to do there. And she does, she does make a bargain with a minor luck spirit named Nadi, who is adorable. And Nadi's like, okay, so I will help you do this thing to get the goal that you want. I will help you do this in exchange for the feel of the view of the sunrise and three glasses of champagne, a piece of cake in your first kiss. So he wants to ride in Beatrice's body and experience them with her. And Nadi's like, go get a second piece of cake. Go do it. Go do it now. And you're just, it's, I love Nadi. We all need to be like Nadi. And Nadia is slightly childlike, very impulsive. But Nadia is also like, she was mean to you. Oh no, I'm a luck spirit. And the punch bowl just fell over on her dress. Oh no. So it's glorious. That's the only fantasy novel I will recommend tonight, because I recommend so many of them. And I'm sure we have listeners who read more than just fantasy. So I'll hop into my second one, which is romance. And this is, Lily mentioned The Hating Game, which is by author Sally Thorne. This is her third book, Second First Impressions. Now, The Hating Game is fiery. The Hating Game is like a 5 on the Steam scale. This one's kind of like a 3.5. The Hating Game is enemies to lovers, has that trope. This is kind of enemies to lovers, but not really. The main character, Ruthie, she has made safe decisions her whole life. She's the daughter of a pastor, and like with all the baggage that comes with that, and with all the, you know, fear and the repression from the unfortunate, from the restrictive upbringing that she had, her father caught them on prom night, and she's like, I just never, like, ever again, like, I never am going to put myself in this situation ever again. She makes safe decisions. She manages a retirement community for very wealthy people, and she's very good at her job. The owner drops off his wild child son at the front desk, and he's like, he needs a job, he needs to grow up and put him to work here. And she's like, that's not really, like, and he's like, well, I'm the boss, like, I'm the owner, and I've only ever stepped foot on this place once, but I'm just gonna drop him off. He makes a terrible first impression. It's not a bad first impression. He hasn't done anything. He thought she was in a costume party as for like the Golden Girls, because she dressed like a cardigan and, like, you know, she looked like she was on her way to a costume party, or he thought, and she's of course horribly offended. And that's the title there, Second First Impressions, is that he made a bad first impression. So she thinks he's like this wild, like, crazy womanizer, and he's not. Like, he rescues turtles, and like, he likes reruns of TV shows, and he's this really sweet guy who has always hated, he's the child of an affair. So he's always been like outcast from the family. And so he has a chip on his shoulder from that, where he's like, well, if you're not going to like me, then I'm going to like myself. And if you wear a suit, you're not going to like that. And the job that they find for him is that there's a set of sisters who live in this retirement community who like to hire very handsome young men to harass. They hire them as a personal assistant, and they basically harass them, you know, until they quit. And they do it as a game. It's on purpose. And they're just, it's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. They run them ragged, and then they make like inappropriate comments, and they don't really, they basically, they're just like, well, you're going to wear this tuxedo and vacuum for us. And he's like, okay. But he just does it. He does it. And he's like, this seems like fun. And it's very sweet. It is not the spicy, fiery heat of The Hating Game. If you go in expecting the spicy, fiery heat of The Hating Game, you are going to be disappointed, because this is like the cashmere sweater kind of romance. It's sweet and it's soft. And I'd kind of rate it like a 3.5 out of 5 on Steamy. Like, it doesn't quite fade to black, but it's not really extremely descriptive. But you know, it is a happily ever after. And, you know, like, he rescues turtles, guys. He's just, it's amazing. And then I'm going to really quickly talk about Skunk and Badger by Amy Timberlake and John Klassen, which is a children's book. It's kind of, I want to call it a chapter book because there are chapters, but each chapter is like 5 pages long. And it's, you know, it's not a picture book, but it's not like a paperback, you know, chapter book. And it is about a badger who lives in his Aunt Lula's brownstone, and he does important rock work because he is a rock scientist. And he is stuck in his routine, and he is kind of a shut-in. He wouldn't call himself a shut-in, but one day a skunk with a suitcase shows up on his doorstep, and Aunt Lula said that he could live there too. And Skunk is loud and noisy and is moving his stuff, and he's very upset about it. But Skunk also asks questions and is thoughtful and makes really delicious breakfast, even though he has to do the dishes. And it's kind of about pushing your own boundaries and getting out of your comfort zone when your comfort zone has become a prison. And it's sweet, and I love it, and it's delightfully absurdist. And I laughed quite a bit, and so did my six-year-old. So that's it. That's, you know, skunk and
badger. I have reluctant readers reading that book right now, like kids who didn't like reading, and then like skunk and badger. They're like, can I read this to you? And I'm like, yes,
please. It's adorable and funny. And there's a second one coming in September called Eggs Marks the Spot. Eggs like chicken eggs, you know, which is adorable.
Right, well, one of them has chickens because, I mean, that's what skunks and badgers do, so. Yeah.
That skunk badger has never met his chicken neighbors, and there's like hundreds of them. And skunk is like, you've never met the chickens? So, you know, like they're right there. So it's adorable, and everybody should read it, and everybody should get it for every first grader in your life, but also for yourself, because it will make you smile.
And I mean, up from first graders, like it's not just for first graders.
I mean, I loved it. I read ahead. You know, I was reading one chapter an afternoon with my six-year-old, and I was just like, okay, I need to know what happens with these.
I would say, like, if you know a strong reader who does Elephant and Piggy, and they're like kind of graduated from that, give them this. But if you know somebody who doesn't like reading, but has like gotten to the higher grades, it's good for that too.
It was hilarious. It was absolutely hilarious. And Amy Timberlake, similarly to John Klassen, has a delightfully realistic, absurdist sentence structure. And that's it. You should all read it. Next person.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, so while you were talking, I just had to ask you, because this book has already, it came out last fall, but Elizabeth, did you read Once in Future Witches? And how does the new, yeah, Jess read it. How does, because right when you were describing the CL Polk, it made me think of Once in Future, which is like not in the same, like I'm getting the impression the CL Polk has more fantasy elements, whereas a like Once in Future, which is would probably go more in the magical realism spectrum. But
I bumped that up my list.
Oh my gosh. Like feminism and using magic to resist, and like it's intersectional feminism, and it's okay, but it also already has been out, like, and so it doesn't technically fit into our what we're talking about. I should also mention that I worked for Hachette, that was like Alex Harrow's publisher for the book, but yes, but I really liked, and I liked her other book, that 10,000 Doors of January, which is kind of like the same but different too. Like she didn't like, what she's so cool about writing is nothing that she's written so far like fits narrowly into one categorization or another. So they're just good and imaginative and feminist, which is awesome. And so her book before The Witches was 10,000 Jess, do you want to talk about that? I could talk about
that. Oh my gosh, yes. I just wanted to say her like prose is gorgeous. She like knows how to turn phrases perfectly. So you'll be reading and you'll just be like, she is so smart. Like, you know that you're in like a really smart writer's hands when you read her books, which is why I really like her writing. But yeah, 10,000 Doors of January was really good. And I feel like it got overlooked a little bit. I don't know why, because it was great. But yeah, it's basically this girl in like 1900s Vermont who was like taken in by this like eccentric caretaker guy, and he employed her father, and her father would go on these like mysterious expeditions every now and then, and basically she never knew where he was going. She just thought he was like kind of like finding like really cool old artifacts for this like rich old, you know, eccentric man. But then she realized that he was actually traveling to other worlds and taking artifacts from other worlds. And she was like, wait a second, what the heck is going on here? And basically it just gets really wild, like to the point where you're like, oh my gosh, there's like so many different elements. Like she can kind of travel between the doors. She then realizes like she has the powers. There's like a missing family element that I don't want to get into because that's a spoiler, but it's so flipping good. And she also has a really bad dog that's a good dog.
I
love him.
Awesome dog character. But I like that idea too. Like you could like write yourself into a different world. Like you could write yourself a door and step through it, and you would be in an entirely different populated world. And then, you know, something goes wrong there, get back to the door and, like, you know, see what's happening in this world. Like, maybe the pandemic's over and everything's, like, fix itself. Cool. You're back. And if it's not, like, write yourself another door and step through that door. So, yeah.
No, it was really cool. I like any books that have, like, a main character who, like, uses the force of their own will, and that's, like, their own magic. Like, that's their gateway into magic, is, like, through sheer force of will and determination. Like, at one point in the book, she was just like, I need to get away from this guy. And then all of a sudden, it was, like, a door appeared. And I was like, what? And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, this is so cool. It just gave me, I don't want to keep going on fantasy tangents, but it gave me, like, Winter Night Trilogy vibes, because the main character in that definitely has, like, magic through, like, sheer determination, and it's absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it has to be feminist. Yeah, okay, I have a couple that aren't fantasy. So
can talk about a romance book, too, if anyone wants to hear.
I was going to do, say Lisa or Lissa K. Adams, is it? Does anybody know how to say that?
I think it's Lissa K.
Is it Lissa K?
I'm not sure.
So she's another one. I love her series. So she's had Romance Book Club. She did Undercover Bromance. So, like, one by one, this group of guys who are friends are each getting to be the main character in a romance book, which is really cool. Like, that's usually romance, even if there's alternating points of view, the main point of view is usually the woman's point of view. There's beginning to be change in this with, like, queer romances and different things that are happening. But I like that she's, like, starts it from a different point of view. So I've been reading her books, and she has Isn't It Romantic is coming out in the summer. So I'm looking forward to that. I know I'm looking at the time. I'm going to go super, super quick. So that's coming. You know, we haven't mentioned that Stacey Abrams, like, she didn't just, like, almost single-handedly save democracy and all of that, but she has a mystery coming out next month while Justice Sleeps is coming out. And that is incredibly exciting. And it'd be really cool if people could, like, buy her book and give her royalties. Like, people should do that. There's a version of Stamped. Everybody should read at least one version of Stamped. And there is the National Book Award winning adult version. There's a Young Readers edition that's good for, like, middle school, high school. And there's about to be, like, a chapter book version called Stamped for Kids. I'm looking at my notes of, like, I'm going to go super quick. It is 7:59. We said we'd go for an hour. I'm really looking forward to a YA book called Aces Fades in the Fall. Oh, this one's a fantasy. I'll just say it really quickly. Under the Whispering Door, TJ Klune. I'm really, really looking forward to. Yeah, I know. Everybody else is nodding. Already out, like, but still pretty new, Firekeeper's Daughter. It's on the bestseller lists. The tagline for the book is an Ojibwe version of Nancy Drew, and I thought it kind of was. I really, really liked it. And a picture book, I Sang You Down from the Stars. It's also on the bestseller list, and it's gorgeous and wonderful and make a good baby shower gift too. And it's still 7:59. It's not 8 o'clock yet, so look.
Stephanie, would you like to go? We will give you more than 45 seconds, though.
So this is looking forward to books?
What if someone came in and said, what have you been reading that has blown your mind and you think everybody should read? And you, like, if someone stands still long enough, what do you hand sell them? Or what would you love to just press into people's faces?
Well, I'd already talked about the Song for the Wild Built. Did Julie, do you actually get a chance to answer this question?
Not yet. But it's funny.
Yeah.
Because I had Song for the Wild Built at the top of my list, because I was going through my list of what have I read in the last 3 months or so. And every time I come across that that title, I pick it back up and I read that last chapter. And I swear, like, I breathe. Everything is okay. That book is going to be staff picked by every single member of my staff. I swear, all of us. Anyway, I love Song for the Wild, but others that I've been enjoying. I just finished The Jasmine Throne. That was Tasha Suri. Speaking of books that I shove into people's faces, it used to be Empire of Sand, and now it's on to her new one. And it's so good. The world building and her characters, and it's all fresh and new. It is, it's beautiful. That's coming out this, I think, June. Another one that I really enjoyed was P. Jilly Clark's Master of Djinn. It's following in the same world as The Haunting of Tramcar 015, which is Tor.com. This is his full-length novel in this world, which is a steampunk history in Egypt, where the djinn have come, so there's magic, and pushed out the colonizers. And so this is Egypt becoming a world power. And what does that look like with magic and steampunk set in the early 1900s? It's fascinating. And the part I love about it is it's also a mystery, right? Because why not throw one more thing in there? It's so good. I bet Meg has an arc for you, Jess. If you ask, my guess is it can be given because it's unbelievable. And there's Becky Chambers' book. And there's Lissa Kay's as well, the Isn't It Romantic, which is the Russian story of that book, the romance book club, and it's really good. He is that soft, squishy hero that the cinnamon book, not out yet. Sorry, it's in the summer.
It's July. I think it's July.
Sorry. Yes. I only read in the future. Backlist is really unusual for me, unless I'm needing a comfort read. But earlier we were talking about romances set in restaurants. Tan Kim Lam has coming out with Happy Endings, which is set in a Washington, D.C. soul food restaurant I'm bad with names, so I'm going to forget the character's name, but the female main character is setting up her sex toys pop-up inside the soul food restaurant. It's wonderful. It's funny. It's that face, and yet it's awesome. Like, and also makes you hungry for soul food. So that's very enjoyable. Adriana Anders came out with Whiteout, which was one of the best romantic suspense books I've read recently. And she has a new one coming out that's called Uncharted, which is similar. Whiteout was set on the Antarctic continent, the two main characters trying to make it across the continent to safety because shenanigans and bad people were chasing them. And it was the hottest, coldest book that I've ever read. Like, wrapped up because they're describing all the Antarctic weather, but like steamy at the same time. Christina Lauren is coming out with Soulmate Equation. I want to say May, I think. And that was also really, really good. They're sort of a stellar breakout. They're not a breakout, but their books break through almost every time. So I really enjoyed that one. My last one that I'm going to end on is Katie Robert is coming out with Neon Gods, which is a fantasy romance, Persephone and Hades falling in love. They are not gods, but they have, think of like society families, and the head of the families attain the title of the gods' names. So Persephone's mother Demeter is at the same level as, there's one in the office for you, Jess. I'll hold it on to you. You'll get it next week. Zeus wants to marry Persephone, and Demeter is handing Persephone over wrapped in a bow. And Persephone's like, no, no, I won't survive. Hades' wives don't survive. So she runs away and gets to the underworld, which is across the river, where she lands in with Hades as a power play to keep away from Zeus. Going by the Steamy's scale, it is like a 7. It is up there, and it's so good. So good. Also going to be the start of the series, and I am so bitter that I've read it ahead of time and now I have even longer to wait. But that one's really good.
One of my favorite web comics called Lore Olympus by Rachel Smythe is going to get published as a physical edition. Everyone needs to check out this book. It is some of the most gorgeous art I've ever seen. So the general premise is that it is set during ancient Greek time in the mortal realm, but in the realm of the gods in Olympus, it is more of this kind of like, not even quite modern day, but like 60s, 70s-ish. So it has this really great parallel of that. And it's just this softest relationship between Persephone and Hades. It is like, I know there's so many different ways to read that relationship. But this is so much of like Persephone is new to Olympus. She's like fresh from the mortal realm and trying to figure out what's going on. And just like, she is this ball of light that he needs. While she is also trying to figure out through her own struggles. But definitely everyone check it out when it is available.
I am really glad that Ryan always lists all the books listed in these podcast episodes, because I have been furiously taking notes and my hand is like covered in ink now, and it's just amazing. Thanks guys for making my TBR pile even larger. I blame all of you. I think we've gone over an hour, and I have really enjoyed seeing everybody, and I don't want this to end, but I also am really thirsty, so I'm going to end this. Thanks so much, everybody, for joining us. We're really looking forward to Independent Bookstore Day. We're really looking forward to seeing everybody in person again someday soon, hopefully. Again, fortunately, we've all gone feral at the same time, so we are all lacking all of our social graces and awareness and like, how do I people again around other people? Fortunately, we're all going through this together. This has been a Independent Bookstore Day, New England Independent Booksellers Association version of the Laydown podcast, where booksellers talk about books. Thank you for book nerding out with us, and have a great day, everybody.
Wasn't that amazing? I told you, they're the best. Thanks again to our incredible panelists. Thank you to Elizabeth for hosting. Oh, what a great event. I'm so sorry that I couldn't be a part of it, but there's always next time. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and we're also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And we'll put those links in the show notes along with all of the books that were mentioned during this episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the stacks. Bye!